who knows, maybe in December time, we might all rewatch it and think differently, but yeah.
Not likely.
Hello and welcome to the Danjo Film Show, episode 21. And as always, I'm joined by the one, the only. He needs no introduction, but I do it every single episode. Please welcome Joe Richards.
Yeah, you are right. I technically am on the title. I am in the name of the show. So really, do I need an introduction? Probably not. But still, I appreciate the amount of effort. Like on our last show, the Christopher Nolan show, the Tenet show, the kind of puns that you were going for there for the introduction, I thought were outstanding. So I do appreciate the effort that you put in to introduce me, Dan.
It's hard, that pressure every week to keep, you know, stepping up. But hope you're well. Hope everyone else is staying safe and well. It's a sunny, sunny day here in Wales. The sun is shining. How have you been, Joey, this week? Obviously, getting back to normal, but I don't know whether people know here in Wales, you know, it's we're in a bit of a limbo at the minute. We don't know what's going to happen, really.
Yeah, it's been a strange couple of days, especially the last 48 hours with Caerphilly going into local lockdown and run the kind of Taff and maybe going into lockdown soon. So yeah, very, very strange times, but I've been okay. Like we were talking before the show, it's been a stressful kind of 24 hours with work is just crazy intense at the moment with, you know, everything kind of getting back to normal. That's all picking up. And then also on top of that, my better half was taken to hospital yesterday with possible appendicitis. So between work yesterday and hospital visit for a couple of hours and then back to work after the hospital visit, it has been a very, very stressful 24 hours, but I'm excited. I've had many coffees today and I'm very excited for the show. This is the kind of highlight of my week and something to kind of get me through it. But you've had a very big day today because this is your kind of first official day back teaching the kids back in the school. And what have you been teaching them today, Dan?
Well, I've been back with the youths today. They've missed me ever so much. And it's great because I'm being paid now. You know, I did my teacher training and that was hard because, you know, you've got to do a lot of work for no money, but I'm back and I'm being paid for it, which is just the icing on the cake. And yeah, you know, as somebody who's a drama PGCE teacher, you probably think, you know, what have you been teaching, Dan? Drama, performing arts? Hey, even a bit of music, a bit of dance, business studies. I'm teaching business studies. And for anyone that knows me, I mean, I love an episode of Dragon's Den, I really do, but I'm no business studies teacher. So it's been crazy. It's been very challenging, but it's one of those things that, you know, a staff member's gone on sick and they just give it to you. And I've learned so much within a couple of days about non-profits, about durable goods, about business enterprises. Honestly, I'm like a dictionary of business studies here. I could give revision lessons. So yeah, it's been good. I had, you know, some nice lessons today, some chatty kids as always.
Did you wear a power suit when you were, you know, teaching them the business studies? And also, did you watch basically every single series of The Apprentice as research to kind of, did you fire anyone today? Did you make them do apprentice style challenges? And like fire somebody at the end of the day and just kick them out of school.
Yeah, so as I entered the room, I entered as Lord Alan Sugarwoods. And you go, Claire, your task this week is to produce and market your own sweet shop. And then I left and I came back as Donald Trump. And I went, ladies and gentlemen. You know, back in the apprentice days, I didn't wear even a suit. So I let Lord Alan Sugar down. I mean, what can you do? You got to just go with the punches and yeah, having fun, you know, enjoying it back with the kids. I mean, let's just hope and pray that it carries on this way because education's important, everybody. You don't think it now, but when you're our age, it's very important. So yeah, I'm glad you're well. Obviously, give my love and best wishes to Hannah because she's a good friend of the show. And I'm sure we'll have her on one episode and it'd be great. But very excited to welcome back to the show a really good friend. She's been on an episode before. I feel like this week's going to be better taste maybe or better selection of films.
Yes.
I feel bad for this next guest because we had her on for an Adam Sandler kind of produced movie, The Wrong Missy. And it just, you know, we had a great time on the show, but it wasn't the best, wasn't, you know, the artistic equivalent of a film. But yeah, we're very much looking forward to welcome Rachel Wagner back to the show. She runs so many different podcasts. You can catch her on the Hallmarkies podcast, catch her on a Disney Talking, which is the podcast she does as well. And Rachel, thank you so much for coming back on.
Hey, y'all are going to think I'm Mrs. Grumpy Pants because I'm I have interesting opinions about this week's movies as well. But yeah, the Wrong Missy was a low point, but it was fun to talk about with y'all. But I'm grateful to be on.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. But I want to ask, obviously, you're coming to us from Utah in the US of A. How is everything over there? Because it feels like there's a lot of things going on. You've got COVID, you've got the election, because I do keep up on all the American networks. I do enjoy watching them. So how is everything in the country right now?
Well, it's been better. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I mean, especially if you're in California with fires that are going on. Some of my friends have had to get evacuated with the fires, and then the insane temperatures. It's been near 120 degrees in California. In Utah, we haven't had it quite as bad, but we did have a windstorm that has turned off power for a bunch of people. Yeah, add that to the Sunday that is it's 2020. Yeah, you got the election, you have COVID. It's certainly been an adventure. You know, you do what you can, but it's been really hard. I think all of us are just exhausted.
We're going to start off today's show on a bit of a somber note. Chadwick Boseman, who obviously played Black Panther, he lost his battle with colon cancer at the age of 43. Big shocking news to everybody, I believe. I mean, he's played so many iconic roles, not just in Black Panther, Marshall, The Five Bloods, most recently, Spike Lee's film. And Joe, I'm going to come to you first. Obviously, you're a huge fan of Black Panther, as we all were. But, you know, Chadwick had been suffering with colon cancer for the last 4 years, even through filming Black Panther and Avengers and all these other roles that he's had to go through, and he kept it very, very privately. Was it a big shock for you?
Yeah, it was a huge shock, and I messaged you in on that morning. I think it broke over here early hours in the UK. I kind of woken up early anyway. I think I was up at like 6:30 or 7, and I just seen, you know, the news come through. And it was one of those news items where you literally just had to double take. And I kind of was like, am I dreaming that this has actually happened? Because I could not believe what I was seeing. I knew there were rumblings of him having some sort of illness. I know there was a video which kind of made the rounds a few months back where he was very skinny and a lot of people were very concerned and a lot of people were very worried about what was going on with him. But I did not realize that obviously it was to this extent. I was devastated. I really was. And when we met up on Sunday for the cinema, you asked me, you know, did I cry? And I was like, I didn't cry, but I very, very nearly came close to, because you're right, like Black Panther holds a special place for me, as it does with a lot of people. And I remember it's my favorite Marvel film of all of them. We've discussed that before. I think it is the best Marvel film to date because it perfectly combines kind of the Lion King and James Bond. And I never knew those two things would work really well, but it does. And I just think it's a Marvel film with something to say, which you can't say a lot of Marvel films do. So I love that film. And it is one of the best experiences I've had, I'd probably say, maybe within the last, certainly 5 years, maybe 10 years at a cinema. I saw it once with Nick, our good friend Nick from Wales in the Movies podcast. And I saw it again a couple of days later. And the electricity of seeing that film both times in a packed out cinema, it felt like unlike any other kind of film I'd seen before or seen since, because there was just an atmosphere amongst the people who just was excited and buzzed for it. And I can't, you know, any other Marvel film, I know Endgame was, you know, a big deal, but still, even with Endgame, I don't think people were as excited. And it was a huge cultural moment, Black Panther, and it's affected a lot of people. And that's one of the nice things which has kind of come out of this, is that, you know, a lot of videos are circulating about people talking about how, you know, it's impacted them, impacted their lives. And I think that's kind of been further kind of hit home by the fact that obviously Chadwick was suffering this whole time. You know, he is a superhero. I think a lot of people have got that kind of vision of him now, just a kind of a deeper understanding that, you know, he is a superhero, he is a king, because going through all these films, he was suffering and he managed to kind of get through it all. I watched Black Panther on the Sunday that the news broke. Looking back at it, you know, you just can't believe that he was, you know, he was so physically strong in that film that you can't believe that he was going through that. And I think it's a valuable life lesson in general, to be honest, that you never know what somebody's going through in their life, regardless of what, you know, the face they might put on for you. But yeah, I was absolutely devastated.
Yeah, I was the same, shocked more than anything. And what I found kind of the most poignant and the most sweet was that he married his longtime girlfriend just months before he passed. And so that was at least something sweet. But yeah, really heartbreaking news. Rachel, what about you? Were you just as shocked as we were?
Oh, yeah. I was stunned. I mean, he's only 4 years older than me. It's definitely something that is very sobering. And I did not, you know, nobody knew, nobody saw coming. And I normally don't get affected by celebrity passings, but I cried. I don't know. It just seemed so sad to me, and to lose him so out of nowhere, it threw me.
He was an actor who just had so much more to give as well. That's what the impression that you got from him was, and those are the stories which are coming out from, you know, the cast and crew and stuff of Black Panther and the other films that he's worked on, many wonderful performances outside of Black Panther, that he was an actor who had just so much more to give. And, you know, we probably had barely scratched the surface of how talented he actually was. And I think that is the sad thing as well. But, you know, he will be missed. And it was very, very sobering, as Rachel said.
It was Chadwick Boseman's performance in 42 that really made us take a second look. There is such an honor and dignity to the way that he played Jackie Robinson that we knew we needed for the character of T'Challa, the Prince of Wakanda.
Chadwick is an amazing actor and we thought would fit perfectly with the MCU.
Black Panther himself, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick, you know, he has a lot of depth. It was amazing as an audience member to, you know, to look into his eyes and see what's going on.
We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe.
A lot of the things about the character are also true about Chad. He's very knowledgeable. He's an athlete, you know, a martial artist. He's had a lot of experience playing roles that come with a lot of weight, you know. So I think he has a lot of weight to him. I think he brings all of that stuff to the role, but not to mention that he's incredibly gifted as an actor and as a performer, and also as a storyteller in his own right.
I am not king of all people. I am king of Wakanda. And it is my responsibility to make sure our people are safe.
Because he is so prepared as an actor, and because his character is sort of flawless on set, it forced the other actors who had scenes with him to kind of raise their game and go, okay, this guy is not taking anything for granted. He's really leaving it all out there. So we have to keep up with him.
What doesn't Chadwick bring to the character? I mean, he's regal and grounded, and he brings a gravitas to it. So all of this feeds his T'Challa, and I think he wore the crown with dignity.
Ibombe!
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 I've known him since I was about like 17, so I've known him for a really long time back in New York. He did the work, obviously. You know, I just think he did an incredible job being true to the character.
Wakanda forever!
I had a great time with Chadwick. Just warmth and camaraderie came into it, of course, with a great deal of respect for his previous work. So when I looked at him with proud eyes, you know, they were as mother and also as comrade and colleague and Angela.
It is your time to be king.
I mean, Chadwick is just a powerhouse. He really is so talented. Every single movie he's made, there's kind of this internal, almost nobility.
The Black Panther has been the protector of Wakanda for generations.
He's such a soulful actor and so professional, so present. He really gives so much to the other person, and he's awesome. And his presence on set, I think, makes that kind of raises the stakes a little bit for everybody.
Chadwick is he's a really smart, interesting, dynamic guy. And I think he was not overwhelmed, but very surprised and somewhat taken aback by the amount of love. It ceased to become just about how well he inhabited the role and all that stuff. It's become part of our culture just as a symbol.
This welcome is one of the most amazing things I've ever experienced.
It's fun to watch just what it means to people. At times, like in my head, I'll be like, well, what does this do for the world? Like, actually, what is it? You know, is it actually valuable in this climate? And I have to say, yes, it actually is. Not because it makes people escape. I think when done right, it gives people hope. I found that it means a lot.
Moving on now, should we get to some reviews? And I wish we had a more uplifting film to go from that, but this is pretty much, you know, very somber, but we're going to give it a go. So we're starting with I'm Thinking of Ending Things. This is the director, directed by Charlie Kaufman, who you know, he directed Anomalisa, Being John Malkovich, and it stars Jesse Buckley, who we love, and it's about a young woman who is going with her boyfriend, played by Jesse Plemons, and they are driving in the snow to meet his family and his parents. And all through that time, she's contemplating of ending the relationship. She's not very happy after only a couple of weeks actually being with him. Time starts to intertwine, weird things start to happen, and I'm not going to spoil any more than that, but here's a clip.
Jake, my boyfriend.
It's snowing.
Winter is coming in.
We have a real connection. A rare and intense attachment. I've never experienced anything like it. I'm thinking of ending things.
Huh?
What?
Did you say something?
I don't think so.
Weird.
I'm visiting Jake's parents for the first time. He hasn't been my boyfriend for very long.
They really are looking forward to meeting you.
I think of ending things.
Hello? We're here.
Oh, hi.
Oh, it's all wet.
Here they come.
Jake has told us so much about you.
He's told me so much about both of you, too.
And you came anyway? Jake tells me you're studying quantum psychics.
Physics.
Really? But there's just something profoundly wrong here.
Are you okay?
Yeah. I think you've ending
something. I am so glad Jake has found someone.
Soon this will all be a distant memory. Who's this?
It's me.
No, it was me.
I tell you, I would misplace my own head if it wasn't screwed onto my own head.
I feel like I was seeing them as they were, seeing them as they will be, seeing them after they're gone. I'm thinking of it.
You can stay here. Excuse me? You don't have to go.
I don't have to go where?
Forward.
People like to think of themselves as points moving through time. But I think it's the opposite. We're stationary, and time
moon
passes through us, blowing like cold wind. Maybe this is how it was always going to end.
Okay, that was a clip there from I'm Thinking of Anything. Shall I start this one off?
You go. I don't know what you think about this yet.
Okay.
You know what I thought, because yes. I sent you a message saying good luck. but you know what I thought, so I'm intrigued to hear what you thought about it.
Yeah. So I hadn't actually watched many of Charlie Kaufman's films before. I just see interviews where he was very awkward and kind of a bit tedious, I would say. And I think I went into this expecting it to be very pretentious and very tedious. And I think, you know, I saw kind of Rachel's thoughts on it earlier on. I'm not going to spoil what she's going to say, but I think I'm on the same wavelength as Rachel. I don't hate this film. I think in a week this week where we have just had Disney generic kind of very, very serviceable stuff to watch, it was kind of refreshing for me to watch something that was tedious, but also made me feel quite uncomfortable at times, made me feel quite tense at times. A film where the story arc seems to not really go a whole anywhere, but I think at least the performances I thought were actually really good on the whole. I thought Jesse Buckley kind of handles the weight of the emotional weight of the film really nicely. So Toni Collette, I mean, even when she's in a film that people don't like, I still think she delivers a really kind of nuanced performance here. And yeah, I thought it was quite ambitious for what it was trying to go for. I think I kind of understood the main themes of it about kind of relationships and death and kind of how, you know, time seems to go so, so quickly. Throughout the movie, Jesse Buckley's character is repeatedly saying, I need to go home, I need to leave, I've got work tomorrow. And it's just kind of being dragged and dragged along into a relationship that you don't want to be a part of anymore. And for that reason, it is obviously a very bleak film. I don't recommend this for everybody. I think fans of Charlie Kaufman will really enjoy it. And from what I'm seeing on the reviews, people have really loved this and have seen things in it that I have not seen in it. But like I said, the film is 2.5 hours long, and I've got to say it didn't drag as much as I thought it was going to. The best moments for me were in the house with the family. I wish it had taken place all in the house. And I know what people would think, oh, how? But I think the right pacing, I think they could have easily done that. The worst scenes for me are when they're in the car. I found them very pretentious. In terms of the performances, I think on the whole, they're really excellent. There's some good use of character development. And actually what we'll see in the other two films we're reviewing, those are two things that are completely missing for me. So it was kind of filled the gap this week where the other two films didn't have. I think it's, you know, it's artistic. It's ambitious at places. It definitely fits an indie audience. I don't think it's for everybody at all. But hopefully if you've watched the trailer, then surely you would kind of get a sense of that. So yeah, I mean, I think you can knock the film down, and it is very film is subjective. You know, if you didn't take to it and you don't like the tone and the atmosphere of it, fair enough. But for me, I kind of appreciated what it was trying to do visually.
Yeah, I feel really torn about this. I don't know. I haven't written my review yet. So I haven't really honestly decided whether I'm going to go fresh or rotten on it, because I don't know. It's frustrating because I honestly didn't really enjoy it. It's one of those movies that it was exactly what I expected it to be, and people that like this kind of thing will love it. And so it's hard to fault a film for doing what it set out to do and for pleasing the people that it set out to please. You know, that's always what I struggle with as a critic, because, like, for instance, I'm not a big fan of super violent horror movies, but I know that there's a place for those and they can be done well and that people like them. So if I have to review a super violent horror movie, that's a challenge for me to try to put aside my individual taste, which we all have them, and review the movie for what it's trying to be, right? But then again, my tastes matter, and that's important, and that's what people are looking for. So finding that balance, because it's not fair to review a movie for not being what it's literally trying to be, you know? And so that's what I struggle with. I think that some people will watch it and think it's brilliant. It tries to say a lot of things. I think the performances are genuinely good. But honestly, I found it kind of slow. I agree with you. Once they got out of the house, then it becomes much more insufferable. It just felt like what it was saying wasn't all that interesting or uplifting. It was pretty cynical. But that's Charlie Kaufman for you. In a way, it's exactly what I thought it was going to be. And what it is, isn't my favorite. I just don't like these kind of movies all that much. But if you loved Synecdoche, New York, if you love adaptation, you know, if you love that kind of thing, then you'll love it. I'm 100% sure you'll love this movie, but I don't love those things. And so...
That's great. I think you've kind of encapsulated what a lot of critics and a lot of reviewers face on a daily basis with films, where your personal taste doesn't match maybe kind of the quality of the film, but you can't help the fact that you don't enjoy the movie. It's, yeah, mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's hard. It's hard to... I know people want it to be really straight, cut and dry, that, oh, I loved this movie or I hated this movie, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have things you liked, things you didn't like, and sometimes things just aren't really made for you, and then what do you do?
Well, I hated this with a passion, and I sat there for 2 hours 15 minutes on a Sunday evening, and maybe I was in a bad mood anyway, because that day me and Dan had gone to go to see a screening of Les Miserables, the new French film, not mm-hmm. the musical, and it got cancelled. We like sat in the cinema for 35 minutes, and it was like a wasted trip to the cinema because they couldn't get it to work. So maybe I was in a bad mood anyway, but I sat there for 2 hours 15 minutes, and I think on paper I thought I would really, really love this, because I'm all for films which are challenging and don't like kind of spell it out for you and make you have to do a little bit of work. Like Tenet, for example, you know, I thought I really had to sit on that for a good day or two before I could work out if I liked it or not. This, I kind of knew within kind of half an hour, 40 minutes that I just wasn't going to get on with it at all. For me, it had all the makings of being a genre piece of work, which kind of had something deeper to say. So, I mean, I hadn't seen any trailers or anything. So when Jesse Buckley and Jesse Plemons get to the house, I thought, oh, okay, this could be quite interesting. Now, is this going down the route of like some sort of horror, like a claustrophobic horror of them being stuck in this house or whatever, and you know, but with something to say, which a lot of great filmmakers do these days. Like one of my favorite films in recent years is Ari Aster's Midsommar, which is a film which on the surface is a horror movie, but it's much more than that. It's like you know, the kind of best breakup movie, and you know, that I've seen in the last couple of years. I get what it was going for. I get the theme. When she says, I'm thinking of ending things, it's not the relationship that she's thinking of ending. It's something else entirely. And I don't want to spoil anything for people who are kind of watching it. And I'm all for creative license. Obviously, this is based on a book. And from what I've read about it afterwards, you know, Kaufman has taken a lot of creative license on the book, because in the book, apparently it is very much a genre piece of work. And the whole sequence set within a school plays out as a kind of slasher story in the book. And it's her being kind of stalked around the halls by this janitor. And, you know, I listened to the review of Mark Kermode, and he said, you know, he's read the book and the book is thrilling. Like the last couple of chapters is thrilling. Maybe I would have taken to the film more if it had kind of stuck to the template of the book and kind of been a genre piece of work, as well as had something to say, as opposed to take that creative license and go, well, that whole ending sequence, I'm actually going to turn into a dance musical, you know, I'm going to turn into a dance sequence.
I think the biggest problem I have with the movie is that I think it's way too long.
Yeah.
I think if this was 90 minutes, I think I would be way more tolerant of sort of a think piece that's, you know, very creative. I like something like Ghost Story, or even the Lighthouse, you know, kind of that's just sort of these weird art house films.
Yeah.
I think I would be way more tolerant of it, but I think that they were pushing it with the 2 hours, that, and especially certain sequences just became so long and frustrating. Yeah. That's where I think that it loses
me. Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, you spot on, like The Lighthouse, by comparison, I loved The Lighthouse, and I don't know what was going on in The Lighthouse at all. I mean, that is a film which just blew my mind. I was like, I don't know what I'm watching, but I kind of like it. I'm not sure. You're right. Yeah. I think if it had been cut even by 20 minutes or 30 minutes, I think it would have brought in a bit tighter, the runtime. I think it would have worked far, far better. But yeah, I just didn't take to it at all. But it is one of those Marmite films. I gave it, I think, literally a 1-star review. And then a lot of the other people on my letterbox were like 5 stars, 5 stars. So
yeah,
it is the film, you know, it's a film you can either love or hate, I think, for sure.
You thought 2020 was divisive. I mean, watch this movie. This is like perfect for this year, isn't it? Couldn't come out at a better time.
Yeah, and I'm not going to discourage anybody from watching it, because like you said, Dan, it is subjective. And when I posted my review on Instagram, one of my good friends, Hannah's good friend, Molly, she messaged me and she's like, oh no, I was really looking forward to it. And I was like, watch it. Like, if you like the look of the trailer, then don't be put off by my review, because you might watch it and you might absolutely love it. But for me, yeah, it just did not work at all.
You mutants are dangerous.
You're not going anywhere.
This place takes your greatest fear and makes you live through it.
Roberto?
Sam?
Juliana?
Danny?
Rain?
We can get out of this together.
This place is designed to keep us inside.
He's right! It's magic!
So am I.
So hot.
Moving on now to something very, very different, and this is New Mutants, which is the long, long, long awaited Fox Marvel spin-off film that's been delayed and delayed and delayed. Joe, do you want to tell us the story behind this?
Yeah, sure. So this is a spin-off to the X-Men franchise, which focuses on 5 young mutants who are kind of trapped within this facility where their powers are tested. Basically, we're told, and we're explained at the beginning of the movie, that New Mutants are the most dangerous type of mutants because their powers, they're not able to control their powers properly. So they're basically housed in this facility where they, you know, tests are carried out on them. They'll either kind of hopefully at some stage progress onto the next stage, which they all think would be to join the X-Men. But as the story starts to progress, certain members of the group start to suspect that there's more than meets the eye, and some spooky happenings start to go on. I saw this on a preview. I was very excited to watch this. I'm not going to lie. It is one of those films now where the story about the film has kind of become more interesting than the film itself, I think. Obviously, this was shot by 20th Century Fox as part of the X-Men franchise. I think they had planned to, at some stage, kind of maybe intertwine these stories with the main kind of streamline of X-Men movies, like X-Men Dark Phoenix, I think, was the last one from that. But then Disney came on board and Disney bought Fox, and Disney didn't really know what to do with New Mutants. And then it was delayed, and then it was like, oh, we're going to release it next year. And then it was delayed again. And then they've managed to release it during a pandemic. So fair play. I went in with very, very keen interest to see what I was going to get. And I came out of it thinking that was fine. Like, that was okay. That sort of didn't live up to the story behind it, to be honest, because I've seen way worse films, and I'm not sure really why Disney have kind of sat on it for so long, because I thought it was okay. It wasn't great, certainly not great at all. Will I rush out to watch it again? No. Will I probably watch it ever again? Probably not. but I think, you know, there have been far worse films that I've seen, and I think it did do an okay-ish job of dealing with what X-Men films usually deal with. There's that really famous scene from X-Men 2 where you know, the Iceman kind of comes out to his family as a mutant. It kind of does that thing, you know, to a degree, which I really admired. But you can just tell that it's had, you know, an axe taken to it in the editing room, and the editing is just all over the place. I was kind of disappointed that they didn't seem to stick to the horror vibe that we kind of got from the trailers. There's one scene in particular which is missing, where like all these figures kind of come out through the walls, and that was even on the poster, I think, at one point. And it feels like they have kind of toned back on the horror elements, which I think really would have made that feel something very different to that kind of mainstream line of X-Men movies. A lot of people are talking about Anya Taylor-Joy's performance. Her character's a little bit racist in some parts of the film at the beginning. You know, the fact that the lead is Native American, she says some, you know, quite mean jibes to her. And a lot of people have said, well, was that really necessary? But I think for a film which has had such a long-winded story of like 3 years, you know, on the shelf, I watched it and I thought, yeah, that's okay. You know, like that doesn't deserve the hype. That doesn't deserve all the attention that it's really gotten. But I thought it was fine. What did you guys think?
I actually had fun with this movie. I thought that it was kind of like a Breakfast Club for superheroes. Performances were all pretty decent, and it gets kind of messy towards the end. And I didn't really care about any of the ties into the greater X-Men, you know, sort of world or whatever. Or I kind of looked at it as sort of a teenage version of Glass, which I also thought was kind of, it was, you know, entertaining enough, but had sort of a messy ending. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It didn't change my life or anything, but I had enough fun watching it. I went fresh on it. I was surprised that it was as low as it was, because I thought it was fine.
I actually preferred it to Glass. I gotta say, if we're putting that and Glass in the same category, I would definitely choose to watch New Mutants over Glass any day of the week. What did you think, Dan?
Joe, I'm like you. I went in, I wanted to see a train wreck. I wanted to see one of the worst movies of the year. I was like, I was there with my glass of wine and I was like, oh, come on, people. It's an epic of money. And yeah, I was expecting just a coherent mess. I mean, what I got is just was just kind of just blandness. It was so bland. And you're right, it's still a mess, but it's just so kind of, there's really nothing to it. And I think I knew what it was going for. For me, this could have been The Breakfast Club meets A Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, that's what I wanted. Mm. And you're right. You know, for me, the film just doesn't have an identity. It switches from so many different things. A third of it feels like it wants to be part of the X-Men universe. A third of it wants to be a YA teen romance.
Yeah.
A third of it wants to be this really dark, creepy kind of Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, with these hallucinations that they're having. And I think if it just stuck to the darker themes, I think it would have been far more interesting, because those bits I actually quite liked. And I think the reason why I just really didn't care for it was just that Dark Phoenix came out last year and a lot of people were like, this is the worst X-Men movie ever. And I was watching, I was thinking, I picked Dark Phoenix over this any day, because at least you had a really solid cast. I got to say, I thought the lead girl in this, I thought she was awful. Blue Hunt, I thought she was atrocious. She's given the weight of the film. She's given so much of the film is revolving around her and her demon bear, which is a whole different thing in itself. And I just thought maybe she had no charisma. And I think what happened was they put her as the lead so that other cast members can kind of make her more interesting. I just agree. I thought Anya Taylor-Joy was great. I loved her. And I wanted a spin-off movie about her, because even though she was a lot in those scenes, she gave it a kick in the butt. You know, she really injected a lot of life and breath into the script. Maisie Williams I liked as well. But yeah, it was just such a mix in the casting for me. And I didn't feel like they had much chemistry as a five. And I just felt like it relied a lot on exposition. And, you know, the first 20 minutes is, hey, here's our little, you know, little group meeting. Hi, I'm So-So. I've got this power because of here. Here's a flashback. And I was just like, this is so lazy. And, you know, the film's had 3 years now to improve, right? So it could have had those 3 years to dip in and out, change a little bit, but it seems like the director was like, no, it's perfection. I'm going to leave it how it is. And at least with Dark Phoenix, they went back and reshot the whole last act. Mm. So yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Dark Phoenix. I still think it's better than people think it is. And yeah, I did not like this at all. I just thought it was incoherent. I thought it was pretty generic. Yeah, I just didn't really know what it wanted to be. So yeah, I did not like it. So,
I definitely disagree with you about Dark Phoenix, because to me, Dark Phoenix actually made like characters that I like and care about actively worse. And so I'd rather watch something that's just kind of generic and fun about new characters than watch something that makes Charles Xavier into kind of a horrible person. So that to me would be the major difference. I just thought that Jessica Chastain was so bad in Dark Phoenix. Her character was terrible. There was nothing in this that to me was actively awful. It was just more kind of like, it was fine.
Yeah, there was nothing awful in there at all. And I think it was just a case of everything that happened in there I'd kind of seen before, and especially with the smiling men or whatever. I thought that would be really cool, like when they were wearing the mask. But yeah, then they take the mask off and they just look like every other CGI kind of creature that I've seen in films like going way back to the 90s. I would have rather them kind of kept the masks on, to be honest.
I had a panic attack. I thought it was Slender Man. I was like, oh, no!
Exactly. I mean, Slender Man. I mean, he looks exactly like Slender Man. It's just not, it doesn't live up to the hype. It's not worthy of the kind of story behind it, for sure.
Citizens, we are under attack from northern invaders.
The story of Mulan. Her journey from village girl to soldier to warrior and hero is very, very real to people. So it's such an honor to bring her to life in a new way.
Every family must contribute one man.
I will fight.
The story of Mulan is inspiring to everybody. It opens up people's imagination.
She is a legendary figure. She represents many great, great, great Chinese values. Honor to family, loyalty to the country. I think she's an icon.
The original ballad of Mulan was written in the 7th century, and it's been told countless times. I love the animated version. It's thrilling to take some of the beloved sequences and make them happen in the real world.
Their leader calls himself Bori Khan.
We have two new characters, our villains, Bori Khan and Shen Yang.
When they find out who you are, they will show you no mercy.
They're putting every ounce of effort to get things right.
Every department did deep research to bring the best version of this legendary story to life.
It is my duty to protect my family.
Mulan means so much because of who she is. She's not a superhero. She's human. But she used her smarts, her quick-wittedness, her strong will to overcome her many challenges.
She's unique. She can do unbelievable things. And love is really the fuel for everything.
I'm so happy that we've been able to deliver an epic vision in a movie of this scale and scope and heart. And I'm so excited for audiences to experience it.
I'm Hua Mulan. I will bring honor to us all.
So moving on now to the last film of this week's show, and it is the long-anticipated remake of Mulan, which is available on Disney Plus for an additional $19.99. So fork out for that. Go in your wallets, everybody. Rachel, do you want to tell us a bit more about the remake?
So this version of Mulan tells the story of Hua Mulan, who's a young girl, a teenager who ends up in the army because her father gets conscripted to be in the army, and she doesn't want him to die, basically. And so she goes in his place, and they end up fighting, and she ends up getting revealed. In this, they have more mysticism than the original film. There's a witch that is kind of challenging her as well, and she ends up saving China. So that's kind of our story.
And what did you think about it?
I really didn't like it. I thought it was very disappointing. I think it had so much potential. It looked great. I think the production and the costumes and all of that were excellent. But I thought the decision to make her have this power of chi was very, very poor. It turned from her story is at its heart is a normal girl who ends up saving China, you know, that realizes that she has this power just as a human, that she's strong. And so making her basically have a superpower, I thought was a huge mistake. And I understand they were trying to go with the sort of Wuxia type of filmmaking and style, but I just thought it ruined sort of the emotional heft of the film, that that instead of her being a normal, ordinary girl that takes on something greater, she was kind of perfect as far as her strengths and her, like, she couldn't be touched practically, you know. I don't know, it just made her less interesting as a human and as a character, and I thought that was a very poor decision. And I thought that the lead actress was not great, and I don't know if it's a language barrier that hurt it. It's just frustrating because I just think it had a lot of potential and they had a lot of good pieces in place, and it just was not executed very well. And so it was disappointing for me.
I'm kind of in the middle of the road with this one. I watched this on Monday night with my better half. Going in, I was already kind of a little bit annoyed about the whole situation, to be honest, because, you know, me and Dan have talked about this a lot on the show, where we think the whole decision for Disney to put this onto Disney Plus just really wasn't the best decision, I don't think. And I said from day one, I just do not know why they haven't just sat on there for a couple more months. It's September now. You know, we'll be in December soon enough. And then let's just wait and see what happens in December and then release it just before Christmas. Oh, going to see like a Disney film on the big screen, like in the build up to Christmas. Great. And they've come out and said, oh yeah, it's going to be available for free on Disney Plus December 4th anyway. So like, why not just wait and see what happens there? So going into this, I was always already a little bit kind of annoyed at Disney and the whole situation, to be honest. And that kind of frustration continued, because I do think the one takeaway from this film I had was that it is visually beautiful. I thought the colors that come through on the film, I felt like the director did a wonderful job of kind of bringing that kind of Disney color to life, probably more so than a lot of the other kind of Disney live action remakes have done. And I thought this is different to something like, you know, The Lion King, which is like literally a verbatim kind of shot by shot remake, pretty much. This does have, you know, you can tell they put a lot of effort into the cinematography and kind of making it look visually wonderful. And I did think visually it was great, but that annoyed me all the more because I thought, well, if you've got a film which is just more than anything, just visually beautiful, wait until it can be seen on the biggest screen possible. Don't just throw it onto, you know, streaming services. You know, I'm okay, I've got a big enough TV, I've got the 4K and all that business, but still it does not beat that experience of seeing it projected on a big screen. So that kind of annoyed me. I do think the visuals are great. I sat there and I thought, wow, that looks lovely. That's really nice. I love the stuff with the Phoenix, especially that kind of last shot towards the end. I won't spoil it, but when she's facing off the villain and the Phoenix rises, I thought that was wonderful. But otherwise, it left me a bit cold. I thought, again, it's that kind of thing that most Disney remakes suffer from, where it is kind of what we've seen before. I agree, Rachel, I think the whole chi thing did kind of make her feel more of a superhero type character. And, you know, I know what they were trying to do. They know there's the romantic element in there. And I know they deliberately at the end didn't, like, you know, kind of have a kind of definitive answer on that romantic element for a purpose, because it's a feminist story. But I think, you know, I miss the kind of romance. I miss the comedy. Like, this film needs more jokes. It needs a lot more jokes, for sure. It kind of takes itself too seriously. So I kind of left and I thought, that was all right. That was okay. but definitely not my favorite Disney remake. Although Hannah, my better half, absolutely loved it. She was just, her eyes were just wide open, her jaw was on the floor. She thought it's her favorite Disney remake to date so far. So it is, you know, yeah, you've got two different kind of polarizing opinions there, but I felt it was fine. But I will wonder, would I have liked it more if I'd seen it on a bigger screen?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to pass over now to the official Mulan expert, Amelia, my better half. And can I just point out, she'd been asking for months and months and months. Back when this was initially supposed to come out in March, I went to her and I was like, all right, so you've seen the original like 100,000 times. I was like, you need to come on. You need to review the remake. And we were both apprehensive about it. And we both watched it together. So why don't you take it away with your thoughts?
I first of all feel so sorry for you having to watch it with me, because I was honestly, like, throughout the whole film, huffing and puffing, like, oh, they're taking this out, oh, they did this.
I was eating my popcorn, she was like, oh, I was like, what, are you okay? Are you having a heart attack? What's going on?
So I'm not surprised that we both had to watch it again. I watched it with my mum again on Monday night, and I still wasn't really impressed. I was just disappointed. Like, there's been such a build-up to this for such a long time. Mm. And I was like, it's okay. It's going to be okay. We're going to have a good remake. But I just thought it was rubbish, to be honest. A bit like Rachel. Very disappointing. Worse than I was expecting. I just felt like it lacked so much humour that we got from, like, the Mushu character in the original. And although the character was still kind of there through the Phoenix, in the remake, I just felt that like it didn't fetch as much as Mushu did in the original. It was very bland for me. There was moments where I was like, come on, where's the drama? Where's the dynamics? And they just left it there. It didn't develop at all in some of the scenes, especially at the start when Mulan decided that she was going to go off to the war. Like, there was not much of a build-up to her actually going. Like, and the hair-cutting scene, where was that?
Yes, like, Hannah did say. She was like, they just skipped the hair-cutting scene. And I've only seen her a couple of times. I was like, what? I don't care. But yeah, Hannah said the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great example of the failings of this movie. So instead of the haircutting scene, which is a big moment in the animated film where she decides that she's going to do this, and in replacement in this movie, they have her taking down her hair for the battle, for the fight, which is stupid. Why on earth would you want to have your hair in your face when you're fighting? So they replace something that's actually impactful and important in developing the character with something that's just for show and just is literally nonsensical for the character to do in that scene. But it looks cool, so let's have her with her hair flying all over the place in the middle of a battle. That's dumb. And like, she didn't even disguise her voice. She didn't even try. There was no sense of sort of fallibility with this person. Like, she was just perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's not interesting to me.
It definitely, like, it was just so iconic in the original. Like, I remember when I first watched it and she cut her mm-hmm. hair off, mm-hmm. I like gasped and I was sobbing with her, because I was like, that is such a brave thing to do. Like, I love my hair. If I had to chop my hair off that short, I would cry. And I just felt that, like, it was so iconic, because it was telling the audience that she was turning her back on this traditional Chinese values of being a woman. Yeah. Meant the only way to bring honor to your family was through marriage, and in Chinese culture, having like long hair is part of that. So she was turning her back on that. Yeah. And I felt that we needed that in the remake as well. And it was just as well through some of the things that they were doing that they stopped points in the film that we had in the original. Like, when she left to go to war, there was a scene in the original where she like looking at her family, and I know they had that, but it was a flashback, and I cannot stand flashbacks. If you can't do it there and then in the scene, don't bother with it at all. And I just felt that's another way in which they just stopped the dynamic. They just thought, okay, we'll put that in later, we'll come back to that. But they needed it there and then just to build up the tension in the movie. And I was definitely confused by the role and purpose of, like, the witch, Gong Li.
Yeah.
Because I felt that she like stole the limelight away from the actual villain in the film. And I thought maybe it's because in the original, the villain has like a falcon that, you know, is in and out of the scenes. I thought, well, maybe Disney are trying to add a purpose or a role to this falcon from the original. But again, I don't think it actually added anything to the actual film. If anything, it took away from the character of Bori Khan.
I feel like Scrooge this week, because I don't know why, I just feel really critical, I'm really not, and I do look forward to a week where I actually love a film, because this week has not been that case. But yeah, like Amelia, I watched it again last night, and all the niggles I had, and at the first time I was like, I agree with most of Amelia's points, but I thought, or maybe me watching it by myself, maybe like not even thinking about the original at all. But it didn't, it was exactly the same. I just didn't enjoy it. It was in the back of my mind all the time. And like Rachel said, I think what Disney were going for here is quite a serious take on Mulan, which they haven't done before. And I'm all for that. And I remember when the trailer came out and we heard Reflection, the new updated version, and I got goosebumps and I was like, wow, this could be really special. And then they get rid of Mushu, they get rid of all the song and dance numbers, and I'm like, okay, well, that's all right, because they'll make it serious. And then they go, okay, well, let's put a mystical witch in here that transforms into a bird. Let's put a phoenix in that flies around where Mulan... And I was just like, oh, I didn't understand it at all. Like, Rachel and Amelia are both right. There were pinnacle moments and scenes within Mulan that really added to her character and really developed the fact that she was sacrificing her life and her reputation. And like Amelia said, kind of the Chinese traditional values of that time to go to war. It was a massive sacrifice. They just rush over it. They rush over so many things. And yeah, no humor. They have all these like male soldiers to come in and they just weren't funny at all. It was just so bland. This week, I just feel like with this and New Mutants, I'm just like, I feel harsh, but genuinely like, I think we both wanted to love it. Mm-hmm. I think we were both forgiving of a lot of things too. Joe's right. Visually, it's, you know, stunning. Mm-hmm. The locations, the set design, the costume design, everything just jumps out of the screen. And I was like, I wish I was watching this in the cinema. Not that I don't think it was a huge deal that I was watching at home. But yeah, it's just for me, it's really one of my least favorite remakes, I've got to say. And yeah, so who knows, maybe in December time we might all rewatch it and think differently, but yeah,
not likely.
Well, Mulan is available on Disney Plus at the minute for an additional fee, $19.99 for premier access, so if you do fancy checking it out. But it's good to point out, in December it will be made free on Disney Plus. Okay, so if you can wait till then, you know, I would recommend it. Yeah, that's all we've got time for on today's show. It has flown by. But a big thank you to Amelia for coming on, our Mulan expert.
Well done, Amelia. It's nice seeing you. I haven't seen you in a while, so it's good to see you.
I know, nice to see you as well.
I know. And how's it been, Amelia, on the Danjo Film Show?
Oh, it's been a one-of-a-kind experience.
You can tell him the truth later on. When
everyone else is fine, but maybe not him.
Very good, very good. And a big thank you again to Rachel Wagner. Thank you so much for coming on. We always love you coming on the show, and best of luck with everything going on in America right now. And before we go, Rachel, do you want to promote yourself? Do you want to tell people where people can find you on social media? And I know obviously you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. I have my review for Mulan is actually at rotoscopers.com, so you can check that out. I write for them sometimes. And then also, you can find me at the Hallmarkies podcast, lots of fun stuff. September is kind of a fun month because there aren't any new movies, so we're just doing some bonuses. Like this week we did an episode on all 5 Parent Trap movies. I bet you didn't know that there were 5.
No, I definitely did not know that.
And so that was really fun. So we're doing some creative stuff that's a little outside the box. But yeah, check out Hallmarkies podcast. We have a ton of fun over there, and I love it. So yeah, check it out.
Brilliant. Yeah, definitely go and check it out. Thank you again to Amelia and Rachel Wagner, and of course to Joe as well for being a splendid host with me.
Yes, for being the Joe to your Dan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Switch the names around, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, and just keep safe, keep safe everyone. And yeah, we'll see you next time for more Danjo Film Show. Thank you so much for listening and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.